All right, here we go. You know, Sully's standing by. Hang on, don't bring him in yet. He's got to bring in that wooden wagon. The teeny tiny lady's coming in. She's in the litter of the day. All right, here she comes down. There's, I've seen the horses in person. It's really quite spectacular.
Yeah, they're beautiful creatures.
They really are. They are. They're majestic.
Not an inch or an ounce of body fat. All muscle. Kind of like you, John Curley.
Thank you. The way the light catches their flanks or their flankings or whatever that's called.
You're losing me.
Here we go.
What seems to be the problem?
Yeah, like, God, liberal weirdos.
What?
Probably driving around in Hyundai.
I mean, you should imagine what would happen if you have a temper tantrum.
Always a voice of reason. She has been teamed up with some of the worst people imagined, Tom, right? And she's always...
She always keeps her cool.
She does. Nothing throws her. She doesn't care. Remember when Pierce Morgan and the teeny tiny came in?
What seems to be the problem?
I'm sorry. I don't believe a word she says. I wouldn't believe it if she read me a weather report.
Okay.
I'm done with it.
And that was it. That was the last time we heard from Pierce Morgan.
Thank God.
And then he... Oh, really?
Yeah, really?
Why? Why? What's wrong with that?
Well, he was kicked out of this country, and that's saying something for bad journalism.
I don't think they kicked him out.
Well, he got fired, didn't he? That's a good question.
He resigned.
What did he get in trouble for? He said something ridiculous.
Well, he got kind of called out on air by a colleague, and then he walked off the set and never returned. So, I mean,
oh yeah,
on
no,
air
that's
too?
That was in Britain, though.
Oh right, right.
No, yeah, no, yeah, no. Yeah. We're talking here.
Did he take a long walk off a short pier?
Oh, I'm not going to let that be the final comment on Pierce Morgan. And then we go right into it's almost like the show's produced. Okay, do the thing about Pierce Morgan again. One more time, sorry.
Did he maybe take a long walk off a short Pierce?
Fix that in post. We can check that up for you.
Oh, and he came up as Crystal.
All right, Sully.
This is what happens when I miss rehearsal.
I know. That's okay. And so you had a good... You did a doctor's note. Okay.
No, thank you.
So is this more of the war on cars in Seattle, or is this because we're just such lazy human beings that we need more time?
Well, it depends on your perspective, but this is all
right,
part of
the
Vision Zero.
All right, it's a war on cars.
All right, see you guys later.
We're lazy. Go ahead.
Yeah, so basically this is a continuation of the Vision Zero part for the city of Seattle to try to, you know, cut down on, you know, pedestrian and bicyclist interactions with cars, because we all know how those usually work out. So what they've done or in the process of doing is they have lowered our ability in their minds of how fast we can walk. Basically, most people assume, or the way it's been done in the past, is when it comes to crosswalks, people assume that the average person can walk relatively okay at 3.5 feet per second. So basically, not a brisk walk, but just barely enough to kind of keep going. Well, the city of Seattle doesn't think that's long enough anymore, sparked primarily by senior citizen groups, as well as disabled groups who say that that's not quite enough time for them to get across intersections, especially some of the longer ones, like you getting across Lake City Way, Aurora, things like that. So they are reducing the speed that they are making an assumption of which people can walk or roll down to 3 feet per second, or in some cases almost 2.5 feet per second, so almost a full foot slower than what the normal calculations have been.
Hmm.
And the thing is, I found this article was so detailed, it was like ridiculous, but I found it fascinating, and it never occurred to me because I'm not deaf or blind, but when you... The reason that they slowed it down to 2.5 seconds is because when people, some people, if you're disabled, you have to be where you punch the light to switch. You can't get right on the lip. You need that extra time to be able to hear and or make out what's happening. So this is really, it's a pro disabilities and or a pro elderly kind of move that I think is great.
Well, yeah, I mean, the downside of this, there doesn't seem to be a big one. Sure, if you're a motorist, or a bicyclist, you know, trying to wait for the walk. I mean, if we're talking another half second, second and a half, I mean, that's really not that big of a deal if it will make it safer for folks who now walk at a much slower or roll or however they go at a much lower pace. So, yeah, I'm the downside. I don't see a big one. I mean, there's nothing wrong, I don't think, with giving a couple a little extra time, because you're right. I mean, if you're impaired, you have to wait for the actual notification, you know, whether you're deaf or blind, whatnot, to know, and then you start. And so it's what it's done is kind of reduce the clock ticking until they're actually able to walk off the curb, which may make sense.
Yeah, and for drivers, the suggestion is you might have to wait an extra second, maybe 2 seconds for the pedestrians. But then they say the lights are then in your favor for a couple of seconds longer too, so that you end up not losing any time. You might even pick up time, which I think is great.
Yeah, that's the calculation. I mean, they're trying to do this in a way that doesn't impact anyone negatively, but does pick things up and give a benefit to segments of the population that probably haven't been part of the calculations before. But, and go ahead, John.
I was going to say that if the car doesn't hit you and that doesn't finish you off, slow walkers nearly 4 times more likely to die of COVID.
Wow, is that from the CDC? I must have missed that today while I was looking at the Suez Canal.
That's from John's bald spot that doesn't exist anymore.
A study looked at the data of more than 400,000 middle-aged people, and they found that those, and this is self-reporting, and those that are walking less than 3 miles per hour, which is that speed that you're talking about there, when the average should be 4 miles per hour of walking, so they've slowed it down, and you are more likely, 4 times more likely, according to the study, to die of COVID if you are a slow walker. I just typed in slow walker effects, and that's the first thing that came up, and I feel sorry for everybody. So if you find the light changing and you find you're getting there just about the time that the light has then switched over, you probably look behind you because the Grim Reaper and the COVID guy is right behind you. So that's this lightning.
Well, if you were dealing with the disabled and elderly, John, that would make sense. So I'm not sure that's any great, brilliant insight.
That or perhaps one of the comorbidities is obesity, too. And if you're not.
All right. Listen, I'm just trying to break it up a little bit. That's all you got. Listen, when we give you the story, they've slowed it down. So the light is now you can walk slower to get across the street. And by the way, zero vision is the worst name for something when it comes to drivers driving down the road. Don't you want to have 20/20 or 20/10 or better vision or eagle eye would have been much.
That's why it's zero vision, zero.
Yeah,
not zero vision. It's vision zero, not zero vision is what it is. Just so you're going to be sure about this.
Did I mention slow walkers are 4 times more likely to die?
Well, and also distracted walkers. Let's not forget that. I mean, people are most times are buried in their face and in their phone and not paying attention anyway. And I've told you guys this before. I'm a guy that kind of likes to look for reasons to make things work for everybody. I think if we spend a little bit more time educating walkers on when you can go or can't go, we might actually pick up the pace a little bit when it comes to you can't enter when we have the don't walk sign going, because what that does is then you're crossing against and then the people can't take rights in their cars. I mean, there's many different people responsible for this. The walkers do have a responsibility in keeping everybody safe as well as themselves. So that's my 2 cents in my soapbox.
Wow, 2 cents.
Who can argue
soapbox
with that?
No, you can't. By the way, at what point will the city of Seattle change the white walking man sign because it's considered to be racist?
I'm sure they'll figure that out and figure out if it makes sense from a cost perspective, obviously, because you have to change out all the signs. No, the walk is a white flashing light. Most of the cases, it's just a garden variety generic stick figure of a human.
Yeah,
with a walk.
But it's it's a white light, not an orange light.
It's a white light. It's a white. Okay. Yeah, red means when they flash, it's the other direction. That's
the don't
for
walk.
Stopping.
Yeah.
So okay. Yeah.
They haven't gotten to that yet. They probably will, though, right?
Seattle? Again, if they're going to cost a lot of money for something like that, they'll have to figure that out, considering how much money they don't
why
have.
Why does it have
right?
to be a man?
Right
why
now.
Does it have to be a man? Or why can't the person just be gender fluid going on?
Well, right now it's just basically it's just a generic binary stick figure.
Yeah, that's about as gender fluid as you can get. That's
I mean, true. There's no skirt on it, obviously, that you would see when some of the bathrooms that we have before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's. You okay. can do with that what you want. John, perhaps you should make that the next plank in what you're doing and running for the mayor of Clay Ellum.
I can't run for mayor, but I can be on the county. Kittitas, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yep, Kittitas County. Why can't you be mayor?
I don't think. By the way, that would be my thing. That would be my thing. Am I pronouncing it correctly? We're talking about being an outsider.
Yeah.
Vote for me. I can pronounce the name of the county, kind of. Sully?
I'd vote for you.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Hopefully he didn't stay up for that. Like, Sully, stay sober till 5:20. All right. Seattle City Council to vote on the bill guaranteeing lawyers for tenants facing eviction.
They did. They already voted on it.
Yeah, they got it done. Yeah. So what happens is if you're a day late or a couple days late, they put the thing on your door telling you you're late, which then gives you the certain amount of time to come up with a thing. They then begin the process to get you out of there. And the idea is that they want you to be able to, they're saying, provide some sort of legal for the people that want to fight this thing. And then things would be better for everybody, right? That's generally the thinking behind it.
Landlords, I'm sure, are not thrilled with this, but the Seattle City Council had before them this proposal that the city would offer any tenants facing eviction a lawyer for free. The city would then pay.
No, it's not because, free.
Well, I mean, free
lawyer
to them.
Working pro bono?
Free to the tenants.
Oh, but not free to you or me.
Well, no, the city would pay.
The city doesn't pay. The people that live in the city pay.
Well, right. Okay, fine. But I mean, whatever funds the city would offer a lawyer to anybody who was facing eviction.
Yes.
And this was a Shama Sawant proposal, and there was one amendment that Shama Sawant worked against, which was to say it can only be for tenants who are indigent. Mm. But that did pass over the objection of Shama Sawant, mm-hmm. and then it went for a unanimous passage. The tricky thing here about the indigent component is they think they want it to be in line with other city policies. Apparently we offer this kind of representation to immigrants who are facing deportation or something.
Mm-hmm.
The key here, though, is this is splitting a difference, which makes it either ridiculous or fine-tuned. And that is, all you have to do is declare yourself indigent. You do not have to prove you're indigent.
But
there's
don't
no
forget,
means,
Tom. But don't forget, only 8%, according to you, will cheat that system.
I want to agree with other speakers who've spoken to oppose any means testing amendments. You know, the truth is people who can afford not to get evicted don't get evicted. And it goes in terms of legal process and life impact. Eviction is already incredibly difficult and demanding. And so it's demeaning and stigmatizing to ask people to have to swear or prove that they are really poor.
Seattle renters deserve...
Okay, let me just say something to this guy. First of all, get a better phone. And secondly, if you're being evicted, don't worry about being shamed and this other stuff, whoever this guy is with this idea. You're being evicted, it's humiliating enough. And the fact that the service is free, when people find things free, do they use more of it, Tom, or less of it?
Less of it, John.
Yes, absolutely.
...of the basic protections of a universal right to counsel program, which means that it's available and accessible to everyone, regardless of income status. Studies show that means testing does not help renters and working people. It does not make the program more efficient. And even the least invasive means testing only adds unnecessary obstacles and only helps big corporate landlords who would love to see this legislation weakened.
Mm-hmm. So what you'll get is, by the way, very few people, in most cases, my experience of being a landlord and knowing a lot of landlords, you put the thing on the door, then the process of trying to get the person out of there is not so easy, and it does cost a lot of money. They don't want to evict people because they don't want to have to flip the apartment in to start all over again. Really, believe me, they want to work with you. But there's a whole process that they have to go through. So as soon as you miss the first day, boom, the thing goes on the door, letting you got 5 days. Then you go again. So the person is not going to use for the lawyer to fight for the eviction part of it. Most of these laws are written for the tenant, not for the landlord, and then to provide counsel for them. How often will they be using it? Who knows? But are they on retainer? That's the other part of it. Is the lawyer always on retainer for this and always being available? Is it a flat fee that you're paying the lawyer for every case, or is the person just going to be sucking it up, taking all the money that we can get for the city council, just pouring into this? Some lawyer sitting there trying to take these cases.
I'm assuming it'd be like Public Defenders Association, you know, whenever a criminal, you know, or somebody accused of a crime can't afford – an attorney,
yes,
we offer them. So yeah. I don't know. I doubt if there's an individual attorney who's on a retainer, but there's a core
they are
of
for
public
defense.
Defenders.
Yes.
For
here yeah. is your council member, Shama Sawand, who wants Boeing to make buses instead of planes.
Seattle now joined New York, San Francisco, Boulder, Colorado, Newark, New Jersey, Baltimore, Maryland, among
all fine cities other than Boulder. Really, just great cities. Really want to be in those crowds? Baltimore? Newark, New Jersey?
San Francisco?
San Francisco? Have you been to
yes.
San Francisco recently, Tom? It's a sewer.
Well, others years, in prescribing legal rights for renters facing eviction.
Okay, there you go. Oh, it's just one more opportunity for the city to be able to spend your money.
Well, I think this is a result of the COVID-19.
Oh,
what
yeah.
the city is afraid of is that this, when we finally have to start collecting all of these overdue rents, that there's going to be this flood of people that are going to rush to become or end up homeless on top of our homeless problem. And so they're trying to mitigate this by that. The argument is, and I'm not saying that this is persuasive for landlords, but something like 90% of landlords in eviction cases have attorneys. That makes some sense. And only about 10% of tenants do. And so they're trying to balance it. But
yeah. By the way, so San Francisco's got $10 million set aside for it. They budget $10 million bucks for the right to counsel.
Okay.
So Seattle could probably beat that if they wanted to, right? Yep.
I don't know. We'll have to see how many people, avail themselves of this. I don't know how high the eviction rates are going to be. They've been on hold just because of the pandemic. We'll have to see once the pandemic melts away how many of these will end up. How many of these will be worked out, you know, between the tenant and the landlord, and how many will end up facing eviction.
Well, I would assume that most of the tenants will not be paying for the back taxes. I mean, for the back rent. I would say they're not going to, Tom.
Well,
it's
okay. going
to come from either, it's going to come either from all the other states paying or the state of Washington paying. It's not going to come
from supposedly there's supposed to be some kind of payment schedule
yeah.
set up to take into account the fact that if your tenants have been out of work for like a year, that there's a way for them to kind of ease back in the payments, but
ugh. Can you imagine?
There was some
$24,000
landlords too.
Yeah, but let's say you're $18,000 or $19,000 behind on
yeah.
on your rent.
Yeah,
why would you stay?
Well, I assume that you don't want it on your credit that you've walked away from, you know, owing rent.
You would be able to say, look, it was a tough time, it was a difficult time, yeah. and this happened, and, you know, the
well,
other part of it is if everybody starts walking, then somebody needs to be able to get into those apartments to pay it, so then you get
yeah.
kind of a fresh start and start all over again. It's the landlord that's taking it in the shorts, or all
well,
the other states kick in the money to help pay for it.
And
that
I am sympathetic to the landlords, too, and that some of that stimulus money is supposed to go to help mitigate landlords
yes.
as well as tenants,
yes.
both at the state and federal level. I don't know if it's anywhere near enough, but
mm-hmm. All right, Tracy Taylor's coming in with our look at traffic for us on a Monday. CDC director, by the way, she should talk to the most of the states there in the Northeast. They seem to be the ones having the problem. Not Mississippi, Arkansas, Florida, but all right. Keep the pressure on, everybody. Get your mask on. Double up on masks, everybody, because 43 million Americans have had both vaccines. We are outpacing every other country in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Andy Slavitt said that today.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good job. Way to go. Warp speed. All right. I like this story, Tom. I knew you would as well. And
yeah.
I thought this is nice to be able to talk about this. I personally didn't lose anybody this year. I know a lot of people that did. And actually went to an event the other day, and the woman got up to speak. She was the chair, the co-chair of this big event, the Washington Wines. And she got up on stage and she said, I lost my mom 2 weeks ago to COVID. I was like,
wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Her name, Carol Smith. And she was, but she took a big deep breath and she goes, but you know what? My mom loved wine and my mom loved this museum and my mom would,
kill me if we didn't do this. So this understanding that she had about where her mother was in her life, and I guess it that probably the mom was, I'm assuming from how old Carol is, that the mom was probably well into her 80s as well. But obviously not to in any way to make light of a loss of a life. But I guess it puts it into perspective. In this case, the story is about what if this was the last year your loved one was lucid, so that they were still kind of tracking with things that were happening in their life.
Yeah, you know, this is the pandemic hit in a particular year or a year and a half now, perhaps, at varying times in people's lives. And I can imagine if you're a senior in high school, for instance, that it must feel like, oh my God, what the worst time ever. This is when you create your final memories of high school and you go off into adulthood. There are other cases where something like, you know, like on Broadway, there were all these shows were in preparation to open on Broadway, and then they were shut down, and whatever starring roles some of them, you know, would have had, they just lost that opportunity for at least another 12, 18 months. And so everyone has a particular reason why this was particularly bad timing. But in this case, it's just a great article in The Atlantic talking about, imagine if you are, if you have dementia, and there are all these stages of dementia, you know, where you start to forget things, but you can still function. I mean, people can have Alzheimer's and still actually continue to work and all this, because it's a progressive disease. And this posits, what about the people who went from lucid over the course of any 12 months or any 18 months in the history of someone's progressive dementia? You can kind of lose a big chunk. And they profile a number of people who were relatively lucid, that could carry on conversations or had a sense of what was going on. And over this last year, because one of two things happened. If you were an Alzheimer's patient or suffering from dementia and you were in assisted living, there are two things that you could have done right at the beginning. You could have stayed in the assisted living, which meant that you could have no visitors, no family visitors. You could look at them through the window, but that's it. So you're cut off from that social isolation is not good for people with dementia, for continuing your lucidity. Mm-hmm. Or you could have checked them out of the assisted living right away and had them move in with you. And they profile a couple of, I think, wives who brought their husbands home. But that, even doing that didn't help, because all the things that these assisted living people had, these social activities, they were also robbed. My mom is 90. She was in, up until COVID, she was in three different choirs, and she had friends who would take her to these choirs, and they've all been shut down for a year now, and it probably will be a year and a half before they get back. And that you're both cut off from visiting family, and you're cut off from the social activities, which help slow down the progression of dementia. It's really heartbreaking for people that were on the cusp, and now they're over the cusp or off that cliff. And it's heartbreaking.
It's certainly probably, if you had early signs of dementia, and then you add in the isolation and the stress and the rest of it, it probably sped up the conditions. I'm assuming that would be the case. Or if it didn't, it robbed you. So, because it really, the whole thing, as I've always said for the last year, it's about trade-offs. And it's about time. And my brother and I go back and forth all the time. Both my parents are gone. But Chuck always says, what do you think Dad's attitude would be? What do you think Mom's attitude would be? Because they're both very different people. And I said, I think Dad would have at first been concerned, but then he would have gone, hey, listen, something's going to get me anyway. You know? So he would like, I'd rather spend it with my kids, my grandkids. Because it becomes into the thing. He always felt like he was in his bonus years. Once he'd been past 78, he said, hey, what do I care? I'm in my bonus years. So he would have done it. I think he would have wanted to spend time with the grandkids instead of being isolated. Because then you say, well, I'm going to be isolated for a whole year. And then you get out and you get hit by a bus. So he looked at it like, these are the years. And I think a lot of the other people that I'd spoken to that are older, that are friends of mine, and they're like, no, I didn't. We did not. Everybody else pulled back. We didn't. We didn't want to, because we just knew, like, I could. What am I going to do? Stare at the wall for a whole year? I could be dead in a couple of days. Yeah. So they knew the risk, and you just keep going, right? And rather than locking yourself up because the government wants to lock you up, you go out and you enjoy life. Especially if you knew that, like, mentally you were starting to lose it,
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, you and I always talk about this. Like, if somebody handed you a piece of paper and said, Tom, this is the day that you're going to die,
yeah,
and there's a date, and there's the time, and there's everything, they don't tell yes. you how it's going to happen, you all of a sudden go, holy moly, I better get going.
Yep.
So I hand you two pieces of paper. One says, Jay Inslee says, where's the tennis? Todd, get back in your house. So the one piece of paper says, get in your house. And the other piece of paper says, Tom, you're going to be dead in 9 months. Would you stay in your house?
That's a good question.
The answer is
not.
No. The answer is no.
The answer is not necessarily no. Okay. I'd want to be alive and healthy for those 9 months.
In your house.
The thing is, if I got, I do not want to spend my last 9 months. Yeah, but my last 9 months, if I was sick with COVID, would be horrible. Yeah. I'd rather have 9 good months. Maybe I wouldn't.
In your house, I'm not giving you that chance. Yes. I'm not giving those options. I'm giving you in your house, staring yes. at the television. Well, this is your life anyway. So I guess.
Well, I know. I love my life in my house. Okay. I got all my books. No, I don't know. I mean, I think that is a good. And here's one other thing, John, that we didn't really focus on. Don't just focus on the people who, you know, are in the assisted living or have dementia or can't visit their family. Think of the family members themselves. If your dad or mom, it was the last year of their life, mm-hmm. and you were cut off from them, all those memories that you could have, the conversations you might want to have, you've been deprived of those as well. It is heartbreaking on all sorts of different levels, depending on, you know, who you are.
Yep.
Ursula was talking just today about her dad just turned 90. My mom just turned 90. Her dad just turned 90. He's in an assisted living place. Mm-hmm. And for his 90th birthday, they only allowed her and her mom, you know, her dad's wife, mm-hmm. to visit them outside, you know, like for an hour. That was all they were allowed.
Right.
And it's like, it's a trade-off. They don't want him to get sick, and they don't want to get everybody else at the assisted living sick. And at the same time, he's saying, oh my God, it's my dad's 90th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else could come see him.
Yeah.
So, it's really, I mean, it's been hard all the way around. And you're right. Everything is about trade-offs.
Yep. If they let you have them. Tracy Taylor. Alrighty, here we go. Seven of your favorite notes from the mailman, please. Feeny, get ready. Feeny.
Hello!
One, two, and Feeny.
Hello!
And double up on the hellos. All right, Tom, we'll get to letter of the day, but first let's take care of all the rest. Here we go.
Okay, we were talking about vaccines and how quickly they should get out for everybody and mm-hmm. the like. Area code 206 wants to weigh in. I'll just pay the high school kid $100 to get a great knockoff vaccine card. Better than a real one.
Mm-hmm. 901 says, when we found vaccine from the past diseases, they didn't need passports for those. Why now?
I think it's because they expect it to be uneven in various countries, whether it's still prevalent. Area code 253, I guarantee more people cheat than not. Mm-hmm. I cheated. Once the teachers jumped me, all bets were off.
There you go. 206, an unhealthy trend. Namely, government pushing off the responsibilities onto the private sector.
Ah, that's the passport business. And area code 509, the only people I know who've got it are people who cheated the system.
There we go. 425, can I sell my vaccine card? I might actually get the vaccine if I can make some money off of the card. Good.
On the Derek Chauvin trial, area code 206, don't worry, John. Mm-hmm. The commies would never be able to find your cabin.
Well, John, with the way you're headed, that Tom on your jury thing, it's likely to happen. What's likely to happen?
That you're going to commit some kind of crime and then I'll be on your jury, I think. That's what they're after.
Okay,
funny. Area code 425. I've been a juror on a murder trial, but I would not be on this one.
Yeah, see, there you go. Tom wanted to be on it. Okay, Donna from the front desk. Donna from the front desk. If I were guilty, I would not want Tom on the jury. If I were innocent, I'd want all my jurors to be Tom. Although, if I were innocent, I'd actually opt for a judge making the decision. Well, thank you, Donna. I appreciate that.
And area code 253. John and Tom, I've been on three juries. A jury trial is a crapshoot. You can't get 12 people to agree that it's Monday afternoon, much less on a person's guilt or innocence. If you're found guilty by a jury, you're guilty of the crime.
There we go. Joe and Sumner says, Tom, I think you'd probably be a fair juror even if you had knowledge that the defendant voted for Donald Trump twice.
Good job, commies.
Yeah.
That is true. John in studio, area code 206. John.
Yes.
No, John's there in person.
Yes.
And looking mighty dapper. was getting a little worried about the amount of time he was spending with his new Clum friends and the amount of Coors Light they've been consuming.
God, I do drink a lot of that stuff. Caveman Exercise 360 says, Tom, you're just old.
Well, that's not just? Bad. Area code 206. Hunter-gatherer, a.k.a. getting beer and smokes at Walmart on my hover round.
It's 425. Tom's politics do remind me of a caveman.
Yeah, hey. On the slow walkers and crosswalks, area code 206. Knees to chest walkers.
Come on. 206, more time to check your Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, and 206, walkers don't care. They have the right of way.
Talk about eviction lawyers, 425 says, I'd like to see the numbers for people that used stimulus money to pay for their rent.
Yeah.
Nobody.
And Eric, oh, we already done. Oh, so many notes we didn't get to.
Yeah, so many great letters. Thank you, everybody. Teeny, I see you right over there. Give me the big thumbs up.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Letter of the day.
Comes from Robert in Redmond. Caller 90% Neil was great. He should win a trip to France.
It is a serious crapshoot. You get nervous when you're doing that, Sean, just dialing numbers, and then the person gets on the phone. And what do you have to say to them?
Well, I'm just like, hey, this is going to sound weird, but, and then I just got to explain it as briefly as I can.
And then what happens?
Well, you saw, I got two callers, baby, Jose and Neil.
Wow. That's all she wrote. What a great outcome.
Didn't write no more.
Didn't write no more.
She left the glue. Let's do another hour.
Hanging around my front door.